SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
What's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. We tried something new. We basically front-loaded the show with all the commercials. All the whole day's commercials. You just heard all 10 minutes of it. We have no idea what went on. I went to start the show at 9 and and all of a sudden, we weren't connected to Florida. I guess we can blame it. We can blame it on the storm, right? Everything else, I mean, it's really nothing you're going to joke about either when you see the devastation. I know that evacuation's going on coastal, up the coast. Our friend Greg Finnan, Tina's got to trade in her Toyota, and Greg's got to get us a new one. His daughter's at College of Charleston, and I talked to him yesterday. I called him back, and he was at Albany Airport because they sent all the kids home from College of Charleston, and I'm sure places, I imagine, you know, the other schools and so forth, evacuating up and down the shoreline. So best of luck to everybody on that front, and happy to be with you on this Wednesday. Plenty to do. We're going to keep recapping the end of the season. Jay Pridman's going to join us in about 8 or 9 minutes at about 9:20 Eastern. We'll get Jay's thoughts. And really to the credit, obviously, of Del Mar management, that as big a story as is coming out of the summer season at Del Mar was the safety record, which was just spectacular. And you know, David Jerkins and Tom Robbins and Joe Harper and really the veterinary staff, everybody that, you know, worked together on that front, just a perfect scenario, you know, coming out of the difficult winter spring back up at Arcadia. So we'll talk to Jay. And we'll talk plenty of racing, not just the off-track portion. Lots of news, and that includes Jay reporting yesterday that Bob Baffert may send Improbable to the Pennsylvania Derby now. It just shows the shifting sands when it comes to, you know, the way in which Baffert you know, tries to take advantage of whatever horse is doing well at the time. And of course, the fact that Improbable May Go and the fact that Game Winner has yet to work back after he got sick. Omaha Beach working forwardly at this point again. And maybe the ACK for him. We'll get that update from Jay, as well as all the other news and notes coming out of Del Mar. Andy Serling, Hour 3. I've got Andy's final thoughts about the Saratoga season. And Andy certainly will concentrate on the racing element on the news front. I did see a piece, I think in the Gazette, Schenectady paper, the city of Saratoga, you know, taking stock as to what the Monday, Tuesday, you know, from the, you know, the city standpoint, you know, how it affected hotel numbers and all that. And they're going to wait for tax receipts and whatever else they use. And the buzz seems to be coming out of the meet, and not something, you know, that I'll discuss with Andy, but the buzz seems to be that Tuesday, Wednesday may be the direction for next summer as opposed to Monday, Tuesday. I think everybody appreciated what the five-day racing did, you know, in terms of keeping everybody, including the horse population, fresh. And the handle numbers were spectacular. I think that, in part, thanks to the television, you know, having Saratoga, you know, virtually broadcast almost nationwide on a daily basis, a big part of that. But could be that a return of Monday, the Monday racing, may work, a Thursday to Monday, and have Tuesday and Wednesday be the dark days. So that might be the wrinkle for next year, and we'll see how it plays out. The racing action here midweek, if what a, you know, what a wave of good racing coming out of the holiday weekend, and we still have plenty to recap. But right here in the middle of the week, Indiana, we'll talk to Bill Downs after Sid visits, and two good stakes today at Indiana, if you haven't had a chance. And yesterday they ran the Indiana Breds. We'll talk about the Florence Henderson and the A.J. Foyt. It's funny, during this time of year, there's a few of these, you know, local, regional, state-bred-type races. Prairie Meadows ran the Donna Reed. I love these that are, you know, that are tied to, you know, local legends. And yesterday, actually, you had two pretty nice races, and you had sizable upsets, particularly in the A.J. Foyt. The A.J. Foyt had big balloons. I mean, an 11-1 over a 10-1 over a 14-1 over a 26-1. There was also plenty of bumping and grinding going on in that. Huntstown survived an inquiry for Kim Hammond, and on the Philly side, in the Florence Henderson, Wonders Got Thunder, Brad Cox for Bad Boy Racing. And this was a mild upset. 6-1, third choice over Aaron West's Marina Legacy, who was a little over 3-5, 70 cents on the dollar. Today, though, two really good ones. And particularly the three-year-old Caesars, where Gray Magician, of course, who ran second, I told you yesterday about the tremendous running of the Smarty Jones. I'll send out a link. The Smarty Jones, I'll reiterate that there were a couple of races that, you know, probably got missed in the crush of the big ovals. But Saturday's race down at Gulfstream, the Affirmed, for the two-year-old boys, you got to see that, and you got to see the Smarty Jones, because it's as good a throwdown as you're going to see. The figures finally came back for Parks. Spun to run a 95 buyer over Gray Magician, but that race is out of this world. So Gray Magician scratches out of the Caesars today, which leaves still a full field of 12. You had a couple of AEs, and it looks like Mike Maker will draw in with Evil Eye. Big full field, really good. And on the Philly side, the Indiana Grand looks fairly wide open as well. I may have happened on a horse. I'm anxious to hear what Bill Downs has to say. I may have happened. Amos has got a horse in here. Story time. It's 12-1. Very interested in. There's some turf movers coming over to the grass. Two terrific $200,000 three-year-old stakes today at Indiana, and a couple of Indiana bred maiden specials in here. A first level allowance that starts the late pick four. Some very good racing. And then tomorrow, and Colonial is running all week. And tomorrow, of course, Kentucky Downs back with another eye-crossing card that's highlighted by the restricted old friends, also known as the Michael Blowen. So we'll look forward to digging into that. And the Saturday card all set as well for Kentucky Downs, the third day of the five-day meet. And you probably saw the headlines that they're going to apply for 7 days, see if they can't get some support from the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. Usually Keeneland and Churchill object. We'll see if maybe Kentucky Downs could wrangle a couple more play dates when the commission sits down on that front. So not sure who we'll check in with to handicap that card for tomorrow, but it's ripe with maiden special. There's three of those rich maiden special races tomorrow at Kentucky Downs. The third for the boys, the fifth, basically a second division, and then the fillies in race seven. And then you got allowance action. You've also got older filly and mare maiden that closes it out, and they're going long on the turf, obviously the turf, but a mile and 5/16. So you better eat your Wheaties when you sit down with this card. It is it's ridiculous. Every single race has got to be dissected, and then wait till you get to Saturday. Saturday's card, another set of stakes, and just as deep and compelling. And when Andy joins us, we'll also look ahead to Belmont, and got my first glance really at the Saturday card that includes the two third legs of the turf triples for the three-year-old boys and the girls, and the new stake with six names, the Grand Prix American Jockey Club Invitational. So pretty funny. The racing at Belmont, it gets off to a flying start Friday, Saturday, if you haven't had a chance to look yet. So plenty to do on the racing front and on the recapping front. And looking forward on all fronts. I mentioned Sid. We'll do a Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And maybe the most important news of the entire day is that it's Tony Black's birthday. Happy birthday to Tony. So seek him out on on social media and or right there at the racetrack when he finishes working horses this morning. Let's reach out, and Deja, we can reach out to Jay Pribman. We'll get Jay in here, and we'll talk about the Del Mar season. So that'll get us going. I don't know. I reached out to Pete. I'm not sure if we'll do. We'll see Pete today, or maybe tomorrow. I'm also waiting on the details of who won, how many winners we got out of the weekend, out of the 3-day, the Beat Pick Challenge. We'll get the final numbers. We went in with basically 1,600, and we'll see how many other people qualified. And I want those that have beat me in one of the 15 feeders. If you aren't a member of the tour, you got to take advantage of the $1 buy-in. And right now, we'll take advantage of Jay Pribman, and the home game has come to an end at Del Mar, and Jay will start to look north, but there's still some time to recap what was just a safe and really, Jay, a meet that the horsemen and the owners and the horse players, I think, really appreciated. It was a return to normalcy, I think, probably as accurate as anything.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. It was, a lot of people came down here in a real tough environment. I think Joe Harper said it best after the races on Monday. He said this was a breath of fresh air, which we all needed the last 2 weeks of the meet. People were thanking me and thanking, which means they were thanking Del Mar. He said there were a lot of pretty depressed people coming down here, back when the meet started. And they had a very successful meeting. Yes, the business numbers were down, but I think anybody who's soberly realistic about what the environment was out in California realizes that that was not the paramount issue coming into this meet. It was a real critical situation going on with all eyes on the sport, especially in Southern California, regarding racing fatalities, and safety had to be the biggest issue down here. And you can put every protocol you want in place, and still there can be acts of God. And there were a couple in the morning. But I think to get through a 7-week race meet with not one catastrophic fatality in a race is a remarkable achievement. And everybody involved at Del Mar who put the safety into place, and the trainers who understood what was going on here and were understanding of the needs of what had to be done, and the California Horse Racing Board. I mean, everybody was pulling in the same direction when it came to that aspect of things here, and then the results were terrific. And I think it needs to be pointed out, because when it doesn't happen, it certainly gets pointed out. And I think when this happens, it needs to be pointed out as well.
No doubt. And I mean, the fact that only the two training incidents were the only, the only fatalities. I mean, certainly the Carla Gaines Bob Baffert collision, everybody understands that that's just a freak occurrence. So to to basically race and train, the Jockey Club database uses, the per start, and even, deeper analysis folds in workouts. And so from a per horse activity statistic, it's a stunning achievement. So, congratulations to everybody involved. Jay, at the same time, it just shows you how difficult this is, because the industry can't use these as as some sort of self-promotion, because the randomness and the spate of injuries, as we've learned over the years, you know, they can come at any time, and there's influences that are out of everybody's control. So it's such a harrowing and difficult topic.
Well, I mean, there are, like I was saying before, acts of God that can happen, but there's also things that can be done to try and mitigate against things happening. And I think, you know, we're seeing that, and we saw it here. I think there's been a change of culture. You know, there's not been a change of culture at Del Mar in terms of safety. I think we're seeing it at other racetracks where you had a agenda of wanting to run as many races as possible and try and get as much handle as possible. And I think there's an understanding that that can't be the way business is conducted. It has to be that safety has to come first. It should always have come first, but I think there's a sober realism that it must come first now. And you know, look, I said this on your show months ago, back when all the things were happening at Santa Anita.
Right.
You know, when you have a performance horse endeavor, whether it's racing or show jumping or cross country or anything like that, there's, or even just trail riding or horses running out in the field, you know, things can happen, but you know, you've just got to do the best you can to try and mitigate against, you know, the worst possible scenarios. But as long as you have a performance horse endeavors, there's going to be some inherent risk involved. The job that we have is to, we mean the sport, not we mean a journalist, is to try and make it the safest environment possible. But there's going to be occasions when, even if you do everything right, something could happen. And that's the inherent risk involved in going and riding a horse, you know, just for a trail ride or doing show jumping or something like that. There's things like that can happen.
Well, not to focus on, you know, the move back to Los Al and ultimately back to Santa Anita, but, you know, what had been, Jay, as camp was breaking, you know, Labor Day weekend, what's the overall mood? And you know, I'm sure there's some trepidation that is going to come with a return to the barn area, essentially, at Santa Anita.
Well, I think everybody's hoping for the best, you know, hoping that things will not repeat themselves. You know, David Jerkins, in the story that I wrote, the racing secretary at Santa Anita, he said that at this meet, we tried to establish normalcy to ride the ship and instill confidence. We wanted to write a condition book so the trainers and owners would understand we're going to run races in the book. We wanted a consistent program that suited the horses on the grounds, even if that meant running a first level allowance with 5 horses instead of a maiden claimer with 7. We proved it can work. Now it's Santa Anita's turn to have a successful meet as they host the Breeders' Cup. And one thing that trainers I know have said that they have found challenging is if you're going to institute protocols where you have to have works approved before you work or things like that, which is fine, you've got to be able to work your horse when you know a race is going to go. And it's hard to train a horse into a race if the condition book is being used at a 50% level. You know, that's, so there needs to be cooperation between and a working together aspect between the track vis-a-vis the racing office and the horsemen, that here, these are the races, we know what horse population we have, and when we say we're going to have this race on this day, there's the likelihood that that race will happen. It's not that we're going to put 27 races up and whichever 8 get the biggest numbers, we run. It's very hard to train a horse for a specific spot when you have a less than 1/3 chance of that race going because so many races are put up. And that's what I think Del Mar did very well here. And I know that trainers are hoping that that is what is instituted on this circuit, because you're going to be asking people to, you know, follow some of these new rules, And these are good rules to have, but you can't work a horse for a race with the chance that, you know, there's a 66% chance it's not even going to be used. You can't, you know, that can't happen. So you've got to have a really good understanding of what your horse population is. And I think, well, that was one major takeaway, I think, from Del Mar, was that David Jerkins and Tom Robbins really had their finger on the pulse of what they were working with. And they would use races, like David said in my story. This allowance race might only have five horses, but there are people who have those five horses, they need that race to go. We can't just say, well, there's only five, we're going to use a bigger field and, you know, tough luck, and we don't know when that race will come back. I mean, you've got to give those people an opportunity. And it doesn't make for the best racing, for gambling product at times, but it has to be done to keep the fairness going on this circuit. And I think they're very cognizant of that. So, you know, to your overarching point, I just think there's the hope that things will be improved as everybody decamps and heads north.
Well, and there is I did see in your revamped story with the expanded quotes, I did see that note that is really quite something, that at no point during the meet did they send out an overnight that had more than two races that didn't go on any given day. They essentially maybe a race a day that had been in the book might not have gone, give or take, but never more than two on any given day. And I see the daily overnights from several places, and you'll see in some cases three extra races, four, and then at times, and we had this in New York, I mean, at times there'll be 8, 9, 10 races as extras, and it's maddening it's like a moving target for horsemen.
Well, I think you can have a lot of extra races if you're not sure which extras might go, but first and foremost is that book's got to be what drives it. And you can't put up eight extras and use six of the extras and only two in the book. I mean, I think that's the difference in the approach. And I think that's what the horsemen at Del Mar appreciated, and trainers and owners, is just having a high degree of confidence that the book was going to go as is, if not, you know, very close to it.
Well, in terms of the actual accomplishments on the racetrack, there were plenty of highlights, and some of the headliners, including Doug O'Neill, ends up winning the training title, and Flavian Pratt the riding title. Some thoughts and some things that you take away from the summer as the attention turns northward.
Well, I mean, the from a stake standpoint, the dominant group was Pratt, as you mentioned, who was the leading rider and won 10 stakes races. But John Sadler, who won 9 stakes, and Ronis Racing, who were the dominant owners, again, highlighted by Higher Powers win in the Pacific Classic and the 2 stakes wins from Catalina Cruiser winning both the San Diego and the Pat O'Brien for the second straight year. It was interesting. You know, Sadler won 8 stakes last summer, and I remember on opening day seeing him after he won the Oceanside with Jazzican, and he said, "Boy, we set the bar pretty high last year. I don't think we can get to that point." But they did. They went over the bar. That was a personal single season record for Sadler, winning 9 stakes races, and he moved into third all time at the track in stakes wins. So he's, I think that was the dominant group, and Pratt getting into that barn. He's in every barn, but he's become the unquestioned best rider out here, and he's having a great year. Not only did he win the Pacific Classic and the riding title here, but obviously Kentucky Derby victory via disqualification, Queen's Plate win. It's winning just a ton of major races, and the two most exciting races of the meet, he won in narrow finishes. Both the Pat O'Brien on Catalina Cruiser, re-rallying to beat Giant Expectations, and then the John Mabee the other day on Basilica, getting up in the last jump to prevail over Juliet Foxtrot. Those were the just two outstanding races to watch, and so those were some of the highlights for me of the meet.
You mentioned Pratt and the end of the meet, of course, involved in that incident on Monday, Jay. And, you know, talk about what transpired and the aftermath in that futurity.
Yeah, that was a pretty harrowing situation. Fortunately, everybody looks like they came out of it unscathed. But about 150 yards into the 7-furlong Del Mar futurity, Eight Rings made a violent left-hand turn and stormed the court. Was narrowly behind him and inside of him. And Eight Rings had Drayden Van Dyck on. You know, there was no way Drayden could stay on with the suddenness and sharpness with which Eight Rings took that left-hand turn, and he got dislodged and unfortunately fell off right in the path of Storm the Court. And Pratt just really had zero opportunity to react. And he also got dislodged while Storm the Court went right over top of Van Dyck. You know, Pratt got right up. He was okay. Drayden was rolling around in the dirt, and Pratt went to, you know, comfort him for the few seconds until the paramedics got there. But they get there quickly because, as you know, they follow the runners around the race course. And Drayden was taken to the hospital Monday, and he was kept overnight. And I talked to his agent yesterday morning, Brad Pegram, who said that he had some lacerations that needed to be stitched up around an eye and on an arm, but he didn't have any broken bones. And you might remember about a couple of years ago, he had a terrible accident where he badly fractured his wrist and arm. And that was one of the fears when this happened was, oh God, I hope he didn't, you know, re-damage that. But he didn't. And so fortunately he's going to be okay. And, you know, Pratt, that was the next to last race of the meet was the futurity. And Pratt rode the final race and won the final race. Kind of put a nice exclamation point on his meet. And fortunately, both horses, I was in touch with both trainers, Baffert of Eight Rings and Pete Erton of Storm the Court, and, you know, both told me that the horses had gotten back to the barn in good order. They were both corralled by outriders and brought back. But it was certainly made for a lot of moving parts to try and gather information on and report on as it all unfolded Monday. But, you know, the bottom line is, I mean, it was a horrible thing to watch, but, you know, fortunately, both riders and both horses look like they're going to be fine.
Well, and you know, that's obviously a positive. What are we, what do we take away with Eight Rings and Baffert going to have to, you know, going to have to take the leading two-year-old, take a different path? Any early thoughts about what he's going to do next?
You know, I don't know. I'm sure he just wants to make sure the horse gets over this incident. But what would make the most sense, would, assuming he's fine, you know, there's no lingering aspects of this, and he trains well once they're now back up at Santa Anita, would be to run in the American Pharoah. I mean, that would be the most logical spot for him. It would have been the most logical spot had he won the race. But now it becomes a probably of more paramount importance to try and move him along towards the Breeders' Cup. So, and you could say the same with Storm the Court too.
Well, and what do we make of Nucky, who and the 1-2 Peter Miller finishers?
I mean, the race fell apart. Let's be honest; it got a 68 buyer figure. Which, to my surprise, was not the record low for a Grade One. there was a spinaway a couple of years ago that got a 66. So, you know, a 68 buyer, final furlong of a 7-furlong race in more than 14 seconds. There's just not a whole lot to honestly be encouraged about by that race. I think, though, for Peter Miller, it was a terrific accomplishment. He finished second at the meet. He ran 1-2 in the Del Mar Futurity. He's always done well at Del Mar, but he came into this meet thinking he probably wouldn't do quite as well because when everything was happening earlier this year, he sent a number of his horses out of the state to Kentucky. And so he, at the start of the meet, he was down on numbers from what he usually has, but he's just always done very well at Del Mar, and that was no different this summer. And so that was, even with the craziness of what happened early in the race and the slow final time and the anemic buyer speed figure, I still think it's a terrific accomplishment to run 1-2 in the Del Mar Futurity.
It just as a sidebar, too, for those that keep tabs on Tote, I think the 35-1 was the longest price of the meet.
It might be, Steve.
I think it was. I think it was. I know that Sarin had one at like 34-1, and there was a 33-1 earlier in the season as well. I also want to throw in that the meet ended strong for Victor Espinoza, and that included the win for James Stack in the juvenile turf on Monday, and a couple of stake wins actually for Victor, also with John Sheriffs, with Noldy in the Del Mar Derby, and he continues to work his way back from what was originally thought could have been career ending. And Victor had a pretty good meet.
Yeah, he did. It was the Juvenile Fillies turf that he won with
Juvenile
the
Fozzie
Stacks horse, by the way. He won 4 stakes during the meet yesterday once more, which had a nice, I had a great ear, or a nice earworm for the Carpenter song going through my head after she won that race on Monday. So that was Espinoza's win for Stack, and then as you mentioned, you won on Nolde in the Del Mar Derby, and he and John Sheriffs are really a formidable team. And I think we were just talking on your show at the beginning of the meet how Sheriffs had a number of 2-year-olds that were much more forward than in years past, and we really saw throughout the meet he had a number of 2-year-old colts who ran big races, either finishing second in maiden races or in one case just a giant win in a 2-turn debut after running second first time out. But he's heading into the fall, and hopefully it'll move on to the spring as well with a really strong group of prospects for races like the Breeders' Cup Juvenile or hopefully the Derby preps and Triple Crown races of next spring.
Well, certainly any Triple Crown trail that includes John Sheriffs is enhanced. That would be great to see. And you mentioned some of them. That Express Train, Jay, how impressed were you?
Very. He had run a good second, 8 rings first time out. But then he really showed off going 2 turns. He'll obviously be a major player in the American Pharaoh. That'll be where he's headed next. But his race was excellent. Got a good, solid buyer figure in the mid-80s. I think he's a terrific prospect. I like that horse a lot.
And I'm just looking. He had Caressa break the maiden as well, and the horse that the kind of exceeded expectations in the debut, the one that ran behind Ginobili a week ago Saturday, the Hollywood Story colt, Honor AP, who had no right to run that well going that short.
No, he ran on well. That was on that was a couple of weeks ago on August the 17th, and he ran on. He finished big behind Ginobili, and there were a few like that this meet. I mean, Express Train was early in the meet like that. Honor AP was towards the 2/3 of the way through the meet or so. But Sheriffs had several that with distance pedigrees that had really good late running debuts who just look like the farther they go, the better they're going to be. They've got the classic kind of pedigrees and to do that. And like we got on this discussion talking about Victor Espinoza. I mean, he works a lot in concert with Sheriffs, not only in the afternoon, but in the mornings, trying to develop these horses. And it pays off. And you know, you see relationships like that in, I think the best example we've seen this year among the three-year-old crop was with Code of Honor, with McGahee and John Velasquez, and all the work that those two collectively put into his development, and it paying off most gloriously in the Travers Stakes. And Sheriff and Espinoza have a similar kind of relationship in terms of working with horses and understanding what they're trying to accomplish, and both being involved in the process.
Now, and also around that same time as the Honor AP debut, they had an allowance win together at a big price, too. They had a $30 or $31 winner mid-court, and the CRK stable team involved with a lot of these horses, including Express Train. Very nice to see John Sheriffs have that kind of a summer. Got to ask about some of the Baffert runners too, Jay. You updated everybody, you know, sort of your notebook wrapping up at Del Mar, and Improbable seemingly parlaying the Shared Belief performance and a follow-up workout into a potential Pennsylvania Derby run.
Right. I mean, it's still under consideration. He worked a half mile yesterday before they got out of here. It was just that whole barn is obviously headed up to Santa Anita now with Del Mar closing, and they'll just see how he trains. But the Pennsylvania Derby is certainly a possibility for him. And the little note I had was just sort of updating the three horses that ran in the Derby and where they're at. And Roadster had a minor setback early in the meet. He was off for 5 weeks, and he got back on the work tab the other day, but he's still several works away from returning to action. And Game Winner, that he got knocked out by that illness that kept him out of the Travers a lot more than I think was anticipated. And he hasn't gone back to the track, or hadn't gone back to the track yet at Del Mar before they left here. He was walking at the barn, but they had not started training him. So he's, you know, I would say he's, I mean, he's certainly not running in the Pennsylvania Derby. And, you know, what that means in terms of a fall campaign, I think just remains to be seen once he gets back to the track and working anew. But he's definitely on hold right now.
Mm. Well, in the meantime, you know, some of those gaps will be filled in by others. And no matter what, the Pennsylvania Derby is going to feels like it's going to be a terrific get together. I want to mention from your note from that same little piece about Improbable, who has the headline. What a nice thing Del Mar has done the last 3 years. The exercise rider of the meet. I thought that was terrific.
Yeah, that's something that the track's done in concert with the safety steward here, Louis Haragi, who's a former jockey. The morning outriders pick someone who they think not only is terrific horsemanship, but also understands the safety first aspect of what they're trying to accomplish here. And this year's honoree is someone who I think a lot of people are familiar with, and that's Beto Gomez, who's best known as the exercise rider for Justify during his Triple Crown sweep of 2018. But he's obviously an integral part of Baffert's operation, Gallup's Improbable, which is, as you were alluding to. And so he was the honoree this year, and I think it's just a nice tribute. They do things like that here. They have an exercise rider of the meet. They have a groom of the meet who's a gentleman who works for Jeff Mullins. So they just do a lot of stuff like that here to recognize not only the headline-grabbing horsemen, but the people who are the integral part of their operations behind the scenes as well.
Well, and a couple more two-year-old notes, Jay. American Theorem for Bruce Kretz and George Papa Padromo, and Baffert back-to-back. Bast won that Del Mar Deb. Go back to Saturday for a second. Some thoughts about those two juvenile performances.
Well, American Theorem had been really highly regarded before his first race. Rustin Kretz bought the horse after he RNA'd as a yearling, and he had trained extremely well for his debut for Papa Padromo, and he won first out. But the thing that was really, I thought, exciting about his race was the way he galloped out afterwards. He looked like a horse who just wanted far more than the mere 5.5 furlongs that he was asked to run first time out the other day. And it looks like he'll come back in the race named for his sire, the American Pharoah at Santa Anita on opening day of the meet. That's one thing, I don't know if people realize this, but I just want to make sure everybody knows. Both the American Pharoah and the Chandelier are going to be run on opening day Friday, the 27th, of Santa Anita's meet. They used to just kind of stack all those races on that first Saturday, but they're going to run the two-year-old races on Friday this year, so just make a note of that. And that's where he's headed next, and that's where Bast is headed next, the same day, but in the Chandelier, the filly race, and her race was just dazzling. She's by Uncle Mo, and she had run second first time out to the debutante favorite, Inspiressa, and the race just really unfolded well for Bast, with three horses vying for the lead and through a fast pace, and she sat back behind it in fourth. But even saying all that, she got a really strong buyer figure and also acted like a horse who is going to be just fine with more distance, and she certainly ran well first time behind Inspiressa, and the extra distance made a huge difference. The trip certainly helped too, but if she got that trip and was narrowly up by a length, it'd be a lot different than getting that trip and winning by more than 8, which is what she did. She's legit.
Well, we also, speaking of Uncle Mo, turn our attention toward Los Al and opening day on Friday, the fifth race, the first maiden race up there. And I see that Baffert is going to send the Uncle Mo $925,000 SF Starlight Sal Cumin product, Mohawk, drew the outside. And this is yet another Jane Lyon product out of Princess Arabella. So we get right back into the action heading up north. And I see that the Mosses have a homebred in there. In fact, a nice homebred, an Into Mischief, Moon Mischief out of Sister Moon. This is a sassy bunch. Also a Sadler with Aronis, and Baffert's got another one in there too called Dodger. So the two-year-old still coming, and really one of the best parts of the summer, Jay, is always the two-year-old scene on both coasts and in the middle of the country too when we fold in those Ellis babies.
No, it's always fun to see these prospects come to the fore, and even more fun to see them this fall when they start having to go two turns and you start seeing who's going to emerge as the top contenders for the Breeders' Cup races.
Well, a terrific summer. And Jay, you and Brad and Steve Anderson and the team with another dynamite coverage. Of course, you had the, I know a lot of people, I did not play Del Mar really other than Pacific Classic Day. But I know that the people that use the Clocker Report were thrilled with the Del Mar information as well. So, well done.
Yeah, Toby Terrell does that for us. He does a terrific job.
Yeah, on both coasts. And here we go. The run-up. It's hard to believe we're, 60 days or less even away from Breeders' Cup. Gotta get ready and start start keeping track of the way these fields are going to come together. Congratulations to everybody involved in the terrific Del Mar summer.
That was really, as Joe Harper said, it was a breath of fresh air.
Hey, well put. Jay Privman, everybody, DRF Privman, and you usually get a little bit of a breather here between now and the start of the Santa Anita meet.
A couple of little quick trips, but still plenty of work to do with the Breeders' Cup, getting close. So I've got a couple of little things, but mostly we'll be around.
Jay Privman, we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Jay Pridman, everybody, and Del Mar Summer. He and Brad, and I mean, you know, we never did not get a chance to talk to Brad one time during the summer, which is too bad. We'll catch him back at Santa Anita, or maybe we'll even hit him up for something at Los Al. This maiden race is, I just pulled up the Los Al card, and this thing jumped off the page between the nearly $1 million yearling and the one of the Mosses. I didn't want to, you know, I wasn't going to harass, we had had John Sadler the previous week, so I wasn't going to harass John yesterday or Monday, but the one that is running on Friday, that Moon Mischief, Sister Moon, that's the dam of Noldy. So this is a half to Noldy, the 2-year-old half by Into Mischief. Does it mean you wait for Moon Mischief to hit the turf? Not necessarily. I don't think there's a sibling that's run before Noldy. I think he was the first to make the races out of Sister Moon, if I'm not mistaken. I'll look that up. There you go. Something to look forward to on Friday. We're going to look forward to Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus. Brought to you by Hill & Dale. It's next. Big, big win for Liam's Map when you talk about the hopeful. And we'll get Sid's thoughts when he joins us next. Later, Bill Downs, Andy Serling, Seth Merrow, and more. Stay with us.